To find out what's really going on behind the music, sometimes you have to dig deep. I'm Dr. Mike, and on the new season of Going There, we're doing just that.
Art or music can be your escape and your therapy.
Going There is the podcast at the crossroads of music and mental health, where we have raw, meaningful conversations with artists like Noah Kahn, Julian Baker, Jason Isbell, Youngblood, The Head and the Heart, and Bishop Briggs.
I recently heard someone describe grief as glitter, where you'll clean it up and then you'll find little pieces.
By opening ourselves up to these real discussions about mental health, we can foster understanding and gain even greater appreciation for the music we all love.
For me, like, my favorite songs give me happy tears.
So join me and some of your favorite artists on the new season of Going There with Dr. Mike, brought to you by Sound Mind Live and the Consequence Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Big news! The sale of the season is here. It's Wayfair's Black Friday sale, and it's on now. Right now, get up to 80% off everything home and everything you need for the season ahead. Save on quality furniture for every room in the house. Essentials for the guest room, whether it's new bedding or a new mattress. Kitchen and dining must-haves for all your hosting needs. And seasonal home finds like throw pillows and decor. Or favorites that you'll use all year long. And with amazing doorbuster deals from November 27th through December 2nd, you can shop the things you love at even lower prices at Wayfair. Plus, you can sit back and relax with Wayfair's fast and easy shipping. Everything home comes straight to your home. And the best part? Free delivery just in time for the holidays. This Black Friday, Wayfair deals are bigger and better than ever. There's no place like home for the holidays. And no place like Wayfair for Black Friday savings. So don't wait. Black Friday ends soon. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now and save up to 80% off at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Happy you're here. Hopefully you've hit that subscribe button. If it's your first time, please do. You're going to get new interviews just like this one every single week. You can find us at Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With, and please do leave a rating and a review wherever you're listening from as well. We've had some great guests dropping by. Pearson Fodet was just here to talk about A Merry Little Xmas and the upcoming Last Mrs. Parrish. We talked with Audrey Nuna. She's one of the voices on K-pop Demon Hunters. Penelope Ann Miller and Erica Christensen drop by to talk about the movie After All. Florence Welch, lead singer of Florence and the Machine, told us about her new record, Everybody Scream. Famke Janssen, she's starring in a new Dutch language series on Netflix called Amsterdam Empire. We hung out with the Kaiser Chiefs and Teenage Fan Club, Moby, MJ Rodriguez, and Ron Funches to talk about Loot on Apple TV+, Broken Social Scene, Speedy Ortiz, Mary Chapin Carpenter, Trampled by Turtles, Ian Astbury of The Cult, just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. And that's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, we're going to be talking with showrunner, writer, and executive producer Abe Sylvia about the second season of Palm Royale on Apple TV+. Of course, starring Kristen Wiig, Laura Dern, Allison Janney, Ricky Martin, Carol Burnett, Josh Lucas. It just goes on and on. In fact, it also stars Amber Shardy Robinson, who we talked to last season. I'm going to also include that interview at the end of this one with Abe Sylvia. But a little bit about Palm Royale, if you haven't watched it yet. The true underdog story that follows Maxine Delacorte, played by Kristen Wiig, as she endeavors to find her footing in the cutthroat world of Palm Beach High Society. As Maxine attempts to cross the impermeable line between the haves and the have-nots, Palm Royale asks the same question that still baffles us today. How much of yourself are you willing to sacrifice to get what someone else has? Palm Royale is a testament to every outsider fighting for their chance to truly belong. In season two, Maxine is left a social pariah after a scandalous public breakdown. She'll have to draw on her deep well of cleverness and cunning to prove once and for all that not only does she belong, but she might have what it takes to rule the town. Along the way, she's going to uncover truths and finally understand what this town is truly built on: secrets, lies, and the occasional felony. It's received 11 Emmy Award nominations already. And Abe and I are going to talk about this second season. In fact, I want to hear from Abe how far he's got the story in mind. Like, if you've watched it, you don't need it, but someone who put it together must have had the red yarn going to say, well, this character and this character and this plot line. They do it wonderfully. You never get lost in the whole thing. You never get confused. And of course, it's so beautiful to watch, too. That late 60s Southern Florida extravagance is all over the screen. So we're going to talk about the stories and coming up with those plot lines. And I also want to talk about the themes, especially this season, exploring feminism and female relationships. All that's and a whole lot more. Let's do this. We're talking season two of Palm Royale on Apple TV Plus. It's Kyle Meredith with Abe Sylvia.
Hi, how are you?
Compliments on the second season of Palm Royale.
Thank you very much.
Bigger, flashier, and the twists and turns you all have kept up with. Seriously, there is so many here. Do you have like a red yarn board that you keep track of all of this with?
Yes, it's in here.
That's dangerous.
It's a dangerous place to be, yes.
But with the story, like how much do you know the story? How much did you know the story going into this season? Mm-hmm. Or do you let the dust settle before you start figuring all that out?
Well, we started writing season two before season one had even aired. So the writer's room was open while I was in post-production on season one. As we were working on the finale, as I was working on the final edit of the finale, I was breaking episode one of season two. Which was actually a real gift. And also the other gift was I didn't have to worry about the audience's response to things. I wasn't writing to a reaction. And that's very, one wouldn't think so, but that's actually very liberating to not have the junk of not junk, I should say, not, you know, the pearls of wisdom that come from the internet informing
well said
our storytelling.
I mean, but still, that's a lot to hang on to get there, and I can understand why that would make sense for you to be allowed that. Do you still have that allowance? Like, I guess, how far do you project a story knowing that things could change?
You always want to leave yourself with some place to go, you know, that you're always, especially on this show, always leaving the characters in an extreme enough circumstance that, you know, that it gives you enough narrative fodder for the next episode. And then, and secondarily, that, you know, that it is also mirrors, you know, it's not just extreme situations, that the extreme situation is mirroring where the characters are emotionally on sort of their journey towards this nirvana of happiness, which, you know, they may or may not ever reach.
Well, especially that mirroring too, because this is entertainment.
Yes.
But you do have the heavier reflections of society, yes, both at that time and what tends to work as today as well. I mean, I'm of course reading from the notes here, going from American exceptionalism on the first season to female empowerment and feminism on the second season.
Yeah.
Like, how did you decide that route?
Well, I think we definitely wanted to explore, like, sort of, you know, sisterhood and female relationships between women who are all ambitious in their own way, but living in a world, certainly even more so than now, but in 1969, where, you know, the container was much tighter. We start episode one and Maxine is literally in a straitjacket because she had the temerity to cry at a party.
Right.
You know, and as I was reading, you know, there's so many books about the history of Palm Beach society, and I've got a few that are out of print, and you hear the stories of these wives that you could tell there was nothing wrong with them. They just had a feeling, and their husbands put them away. You know, so the disgraced socialite apartment is our homage to the socialites of yore who all, committed the crime of having a feeling,
right,
and not just towing the line.
That there's that line, which is the first or second episode, right? I can't act like I'm angry because people will think that I'm crazy.
And if they think that I'm crazy, I won't be free.
Right. I mean, talk about a line that hits.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right away. And those are all the way through it. And I got to quickly compliment you on that opening scene and the choreography. I mean, what a way to start a season right there.
Thank you.
Yeah. Just beautiful. Congratulations, seriously, on this new season. I love this story so much and what you all are doing with it. And I appreciate you taking the time today.
Thank you very much. Nice to meet you.
And we'll be right back right after this.
This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith. Thanks to Abe Sylvia there. So as I mentioned, last season, for season one, we talked with Amber Shardy Robinson, who plays Virginia in the series. And we got to talk about what the show offers, having been set in 1969, especially as a Black voice during that time. And in contrast to the resort characters that she's frequently at odds with. A little bonus interview here, part two, talking Palm Royale on Apple TV Plus. It's Kyle Meredith with Amber Shardy Robinson.
How are you?
It's been so fun watching this season of Palm Royale and and everything you've been a part of. I was thinking, of course, you know, as with any project that, you know, you get to be a part of, anybody gets to be a part of, you shoot it so far back, time happens.
Yeah.
But it's kind of fun actually getting to talk to you in the middle of the season, because have you been watching it? Do you keep up in that way in real time with everybody else?
Yes and no. Sometimes, you know, my nervous system can't handle it. Like, I'm like, everybody is watching this at the same time. So I was lucky enough to be able to see the first five episodes before they came out. And this was like before they cut it all together, there was still like green screens and things in the background. And so episode six, I was like, okay, let me just go ahead on and watch it, because a couple of my castmates was like, you need to watch this episode, it's amazing. And so I turned it on, and from beginning to end, I was just bawling, because not only is the episode very, very like heart-wrenching, but just watching all of the elements come together, like the artwork, and it was just amazing to see. I was like, this is a really good show. And everybody's like, yeah. And I was like, well, you know, when you're in something, you kind of like, your awareness is a little different than everybody else's. So it's just really cool to see it in its full glory. It's such a beautiful show.
Are you able to separate?
Kind of. Like, I watch, and when I watch those first five episodes, it's the reason why I didn't watch all 10 is because watching myself sometimes feels like fresh hell. And you're like, why'd you make that decision? You did that with your lips. You did that with your eyes. Why would you look over there? But when I'm watching everybody else, I have to step outside of myself and be like, well, when I'm watching Kristen and Laura, I'm not thinking about, oh, their hand went here. I'm like, so people aren't actually watching it with a critical eye like you are. So you have to take that hat off and try to enjoy the show. Just try to be present.
Because it's a very fun show. It's a very fun show. And it's interesting, because I remember when I went into it pretty blind, I guess, and, you know, just kind of taking it as it comes. And I remember those first couple episodes going, what is this?
Yeah.
You know,
what's going to happen? It does a good job of leaving you on the cliffhanger. As for me, when I read, we got the episodes as we were shooting them. So you get episode one and then you shoot it. Then you get episode two. So I'm reading And as I'm reading the scripts as they come in, I'm like, oh my God. I was like, what now? And then when we got to episode 10, I was like, oh my God, what now? Like, I can't wait for you guys to see the end. It's such a good show. And I was just so caught off guard every week going into work. I was like, okay, well, this is happening. And now being able to watch it, it's like, oh, wow, look how they put all that together. It's so cool.
Yeah. Oh, wow. What happens now, by the way? Yeah, by the end. And that's what happens now.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's like, even backing up, like, and I do want to hit on like episode five, right? Like, you really get to have fun on that fifth mm-hmm. episode. What mm-hmm. did I write down? Like, Watergate Scooby-Doo or Scooby-Doo. Yeah. Like, that's what it felt like to me.
Yeah. I felt like between 5, 6, and 7, those were like the funnest episodes to shoot, especially the funeral scene, despite it being so heavy. Everybody was on set that day. And it's kind of rare when you have so many people in a cast for us to all be in one spot. So it was a really, really, really heightened, fun day. It was hot that day. We were outside. We had our little fans. We just had a good time shooting those episodes.
Yeah, because up until that point, right, like, they'd kept the two social groups separate, like, completely yeah. separate.
Even when we were shooting, it was almost like I was actually living this life. Like, there were moments where Kristen would come in and I was like, oh, she has on yellow today. That's nice. And I was like, I like those heels in my mind as Amber, not as Virginia. But I'm like, they were living a completely different life over there compared to us. Even in how we're dressed, like the colors, we're in earth tones and they're in the pastels. It's just a completely different world.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Amber Chardet Robinson. Well, let's talk about that world. I know you've done some of that in the past with these interviews, but I'd love to hear, like, for this being set in the period it's set in the it was 60s, right? Late 60s. Mm-hmm. Like, what does that offer? What does that offer you as an actor?
It offers me like a little insight into that time period, which I think is so cool to experience. I mean, as for Black people, it was a very specific time. So to be able to be in this environment and be a Black woman and be a voice for us is so important to me. It's another reason why I signed up to do this show. Because it's really hard for African-American women to see themselves in the feminist movement in 2024, let alone 1969. I was like, what does that look like? What does that feel like? Because me, myself, I struggle with feeling included in that movement today. So I'm like, I can only imagine how I would feel in 1969. So for me, it was a journey.
So how did you get that mindset then? I mean, is that research? I mean, because a lot of this feels very natural, and I'm sure a lot of it would be natural. Mm-hmm. But like, to, as you're saying, you're learning this as you're going. Like, mm-hmm. how did you get into that? What would it have been like at that moment?
I think it's about, Virginia is what people like to call the moral compass of the show. I like to think of her as somebody who lives in reality. You know, as a Black person, we're born into this reality. Whereas people like in the high society, they get to choose what kind of life they want to live. And being a Black woman in 1969, I have to live in what's real for me, what's actually happening in front of me, and how people are actually treating me. And so looking at how they chose to live their lives and the reality that they got to choose really grinded my gears as a Black woman. Even when I read the script, I was like, you know, like, so it wasn't hard for me to be like, I'm gonna live in reality while y'all live in the fairy tale land, because I don't have a choice. I don't have that privilege to look outside of myself and be like, I'm gonna go join the country club and live this kind of life. No, I have to live what is given to me, what's laid out for me. I don't have that option.
But and what's interesting about this role too, and as we're talking about the tone of the show, it's like, here you are, when it's the bookstore's turn and beyond that, but especially then, you know, there are conversations of feminism, there are conversations of the patriarchy, there are conversations of racism while doing it through comedy.
Yeah, and comedy is a little bit more palatable, I believe. It allows people to sit back willingly on this ride, rather than sometimes things could be heavy-handed, or a lot of people tend to turn their heads away from things because they're like, I don't want to be force fed anything. I don't, you know, those kind of energies. But when it's served on a dish of comedy, people are like, never thought about it that way. Or that's funny. Like, it opens up another portal in people's minds to be able to take in the idea of change or the idea of, you know, revolution.
Yeah. Especially like, there are those moments where you're talking to Laura Dern's character and you say, yeah, that wouldn't happen for me.
It wouldn't.
Right. And yeah. and I'm only echoing you here. It's like those moments where you've had this laughter and you've had these bizarre, outlandish moments, mm-hmm. and then you get a line like that and it just lands.
Yeah. And because the world is so specific. You know, this world is very white dominated. So for someone like me to exist in this world, the things that they are getting away with, I wouldn't dare even get the opportunity to go steal from your day daddy at his own funeral. It's just not happening.
That line, I'm not robbing your dead daddy at his own funeral.
Not doing it.
And what's the other line? I'm going to go ahead and try this one. I don't consider myself with the shenanigans of
Vapid Poons.
Like those lines. Were there any lines? I mean, how was it to deliver that? Like, is it easy? Like, do you have any trouble delivering any of these lines in these moments?
No, because the circumstances are so similar to how I think in those moments anyway. So sitting there with Kristen and her like, oh my God, you know, I'm like, there are bigger fish to fry out here. Like, they're not letting us drink out the same water fountains. There are other things that are going on. Like, we just came off the heels of the civil rights movement. Like, and you're worried about apples and oranges. There's bigger things to be worried about here. So it wasn't hard for me to be like, girl, whatever. Like, it's a wake up call, really. I think Virginia's the alarm clock in this situation.
I will say you are obviously a professional at this. And when I see those scenes and I hear those lines and I see your scene partners, which Kristen Wiig and the faces that she makes, like that's the moments like, how in the world is she holding this together and pulling this off?
You should be asking us, because that lady is a comedic genius. There were moments where me and Laura Dern are sitting across from Kristen Wiig and we have to turn our heads away from the camera because she is so funny. There were moments where they would let her improv and we would be like, I can't look at her. I literally cannot look at her because she takes it so seriously, but it's the most absurd things that are coming out of her mouth. It is hilarious. She's such a professional.
And it is interesting seeing the two groups because they are both social groups. So right. Even in all these differences, I think, but they're still social groups in Palm Beach, you know, maybe it's West Palm Beach, yeah. Or whatever. Like we see the difference, but do you think of them in that similar way? Like you're really just two sides of a coin in some matters, I guess.
Yeah, I think there, like I said earlier, there's an opportunity for them to be social, but also turn a blind eye to certain things because they have that privilege to do so. Mm-hmm. Whereas someone who looks like me, I have to consider everybody. I have to consider for my survival, for my own survival in this environment. I have no choice. I can't turn a blind eye here, which is, I think that builds the resentment between the two.
Of course, there's still a lot of mystery with Virginia that's being set up. So
I love that. I love it. And I love that people are like actually seeing that aspect of it. So it's really exciting.
I also want to point out, what was I reading? Like in Black, the song Black Melt, like you've actually got a musical theme that's been assigned to you.
Yeah, we all do, which I thought was really cool. I was like, oh, wow. I found out on Instagram like a week or two ago. I was like, oh, I love this. And every week, the composer, he like puts out different songs for different things. And I'm glad he's doing that because there's so much music within the show, like especially the funeral scene when Bruce Dern dies. I'm like, what is that song? It was so specific and it encapsulated that moment so well. Really good work.
Now, outside of the score, and it's on the spot question right here, so apologies. But if you've got a theme song for Virginia Mind, like this is her power song, what do you think it's going to be?
The thing that's been bopping around in my mind is I heard it through the grapevine by I don't know why I'm drawing the blank. I heard it through the grapevine. Is that?
Yeah, it's Marvin Gaye, right? It's Marvin Gaye. Yeah. It's with the group, but yeah.
Yeah. Because she hears and sees everything. And yes. She is like, to me, Virginia has a lot of power to take these people down, you know, in the grand scheme of things. And she knows more than what people think she knows. And she's way more equipped than what they think she is. She's overqualified to be in this environment. Let's just say that.
I like that song choice. I do like that song choice. I'll wrap up because I know you got some other things going on too. What was I seeing? Black Cypress Bayou. Are you done with that? Is that?
Yeah, I just wrapped the play that we ended March 17th. We were at the Geffen Playhouse here in LA.
Yeah.
It's a really cool experience. It was really nice to be back on stage and to do a play, because it's nothing like feeling that energy from the audience every night and being able to like live in a character for a specific amount of time. Really good time. A blessing.
Yeah, congrats on that. And I also caught one of the other interviews you were doing. Somebody asked you if you could go back, and you were talking about the Harlem Renaissance period. And I'm thinking, like, I would love to see you as well in something like that. Why did you pick that one?
Because that was a time for people who look like me and people who I feel like I'm like a great grandbaby of that era. Like, I lived in New York. I'm an artist. I lived in that community. So to be able to go back and be with some of the great people that we look at their work today, like James Baldwin and Langston Hughes, and to be around them while they're in this mode of creativity, this energy of creativity, would be such one hell of an experience. Like, you would learn. I feel like I would just, let me just touch the hem of Langston Hughes' garment real quick, like just to give me some of that good creative energy. Like, it's just such a cool time for Black folks and artists at that time, music, television, dancers, all of that. It was such a great period. I mean, it wasn't great as far as like socially in society, but as far as creativity goes, it was a huge moment for us.
Great, great music. I've spent a lot of time listening to the jazz era stuff that came out of that.
Yes.
I'd love to see you in that role. In the meantime, Pomeroy was so good. And it's so much fun to watch all of you all go on these adventures and develop and the twists and turns. Congrats on the season. And thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it.
Thank you so much.
All right. My thanks to Amber Chardet Robinson. Of course, thanks to Abe Sylvia as well. Season 2 of Palm Royale is now playing on Apple TV Plus. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button before you get out of here. You're going to get new interviews just like this one sent your way every single week. You can grab us at Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With, and please do give the series a rating and leave a review wherever you're listening from. After that, you can head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday. Starts at 6 p.m. Eastern. It's 4 hours of classics from the 70s, 80s, 90s. You get the best of new music, lots of classic alternative, new indie cuts, lots of music news. One of my recent shows features some classics and favorites from Ann and Nancy Wilson of Hearts, The Police, Nirvana, Toots and the Maytals, Arrested Development, Alabama Shakes, Sturgill Simpson, R.E.M., David Bowie, Jam Nation, Headache, Snowcaps, Waxahachie, John Legend, The Roots, Norah Jones, Cynthia Erivo, and my interviews with Peaches, Beach House, and Julia Michaels. That's what you get when you tune in weeknights starting 6 p.m. at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always at Kyle Meredith. Please do like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here! Right now, get up to 80% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, seasonal decor, and way more. All at Wayfair. These are Wayfair's best deals of the year. From seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, enjoy fast and free shipping with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 80% off during Wayfair's Black Friday sale. Now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.